Breaking news tonight, hung jury in Baltimore calls for calm in a city ravaged by violence as the first officer charged in the death of Freddie Gray walks free in a mistrial. The cost of borrowing now more expensive as the Fed hikes interest rates for the first time in years. What it means for your mortgage, car loans, and credit cards. Flying high, we're all access with Marco Rubio after those fiery debate exchanges with Ted Cruz. Also tonight, Donald Trump, who he's taking aim at today. No surgery needed, a potential game changer in the way we treat kids with appendicitis. What doctors say might work just as well for many. And NBC News exclusive, inside Los Alamos, the top secret nuclear weapons lab, the hidden chamber now being used in the war on cancer. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. There are calls for calm as protesters gather tonight in Baltimore, just hours after a jury failed to reach a verdict in the trial of a police officer in a case that triggered riots throughout the city in April. The trial was of the first of six police officers charged in connection with the death of Freddie Gray, who died while he was in police custody. Late today, the judge declared a mistrial in the case of Officer William Porter, who was accused of manslaughter. And now it's up to the state's attorney to decide whether to retry him. NBC's Ron Mott has late details.
As word of a mistrial spread, cries of protest and scuffles. A jury of seven blacks and five whites failing to reach a verdict in the case against Baltimore police officer William Porter, charged with manslaughter in the death of Freddie Gray. Tonight, Gray's family and supporters remain hopeful justice will be served.
This is just a temporary bump on the road to justice.
We are calm. You should be calm, too.
The state argued Porter showed indifference to Gray's well-being by not securing him in a seatbelt while being transported in a police van following his arrest last April and for not getting him medical help. The jury deadlocked on all four counts Porter faced, including second-degree assault, reckless endangerment, and misconduct in office. Gray suffered a broken neck and died a week later, touching off more than a week of fiery riots, the worst violence in this city in decades, a repeat of which this admitted gang member sought to squelch today, hours before the mistrial announcement.
Y'all mad, y'all angry, y'all want to tear stuff up. I understand, but that's not the right way to go.
Is it worth retrying him?
I would like to know the divide in the jury.
Some legal analysts contend today's mistrial could make upcoming cases against five other police officers, including the van driver charged with second-degree murder, even more challenging for prosecutors.
Officer Porter was one of the easier cases to defend because he was not one of the principals that placed Freddie Gray in the situation he was in.
And tonight, city officials also called for calm.
All of us, if we believe in justice, must have respect for the outcome of the judicial process.
The family of Freddie Gray had already reached a $6.4 million civil settlement with the city, a city racing for what could be a long night of demonstrations. Now, the second trial is set to start next month. The defendant is the officer who drove that van. Lester?
Ron Mott in Baltimore, thanks. Big news about the economy tonight, and it affects everything from your mortgage to your 401k. For the first time in nearly a decade, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates today a quarter point. It's a major sign the economy is improving. On Wall Street, stocks finished up across the board, but after years of the cost to borrow money being virtually nothing, it's now getting more expensive. Our business correspondent Olivia Stearns explains.
One, two, three, four.
Like so many families, the Hebners knew this day would come. And so when they found their dream home, they acted fast.
Our feeling is that if interest rates go up and you're paying more per month on your mortgage, then that's probably less of a house that you can buy.
And today, just a week after they moved in, the Federal Reserve voted unanimously to raise the interest rate, effective immediately.
It reflects the committee's confidence that the economy will continue to strengthen.
The increase will affect rates on everything from credit cards to 401ks, mortgages, and car loans. Today's hike is just a quarter of 1%, but the Fed is expected to continue raising rates gradually.
The impact of one rate hike is almost inconsequential, but it starts to mount over time. And so if we get down the road 12 months and the Federal Reserve has hiked interest rates a few more times, that's when you notice.
For a family looking to take out a $300,000 mortgage, today's quarter percent rate hike could mean paying an additional $530 a year. If the Fed raises the rate by a quarter percent twice more, that payment would jump by nearly $1,600 a year. But a rate hike isn't all bad news for your wallet. It helps encourage saving, may lead to more income for retirees, and a stronger dollar is good for Americans traveling abroad. Despite the hike, rates are still near all-time lows.
There you go.
And that means Americans who are still looking for their dream home still have time to buy.
And Lester, the focus now is on how fast rates go up over the next 12 to 18 months. The Fed says rates will go up gradually and only if the economy continues to improve. The last thing they want to do is raise them too fast and knock the recovery off course.
All right, Olivia, thank you. Last night's Republican presidential debate was perhaps the fiercest one we've seen so far. Senator Marco Rubio had one of the most talked about performances of the debate. And today, NBC's Hallie Jackson traveled exclusively with him, all while frontrunner Donald Trump came out swinging.
Donald Trump sticking the landing today on a victory lap like he's already the nominee, a day after promising if he's not, he won't run as an independent.
I am totally committed to the Republican Party. I feel very honored to be the front runner.
The Trump battle everyone expected with Ted Cruz never materialized, but one with Jeb Bush did.
You're never going to be president of the United States
tough,
by insulting
Jeb, yeah?
your way to
well,
the
let's
presidency.
Let's see, I'm at 42 and you're at 3. Last night, I had Jeb come at me. You know, low energy.
And in another corner, Cruz versus Marco Rubio, hammering each other on national security and immigration.
Does Ted Cruz rule out ever legalizing people that are in this country illegally now?
Senator Cruz?
I have never supported legalization.
Do you rule it out?
I have never supported legalization, and I do not intend to support legalization.
Cruz's counterpunch aimed at Rubio's support of a pathway to citizenship, part of the immigration reform he tried to pass in 2013. Now, a liability.
Do you regret having been a part of that process?
No, I went to Washington to solve problems.
So why run away from it now?
We can't do it comprehensively. You can't do it in one big piece of legislation. My view on that is, I personally do not believe that it is good for America to have millions of people permanently living here who can never become Americans.
Our interview, part of a fast-moving day on the campaign trail.
Is there a real good tete-a-tete between you and Mr. Cruz?
In New Hampshire and in Iowa.
Do you always have the Des Moines Register on the plane?
No, only when we're in Des Moines. You know, we're happy about the headline today.
The lead story in a state where he's campaigned less than Ted Cruz.
I'm motivated by reaching out to people because that's who I am and where I come from.
And I don't think anything is like the last 5 weeks before the Iowa caucus. I feel very confident and optimistic about it.
And while Rubio still trails his Republican rival in Iowa, both still sit behind the front runner nationally. In this Republican race, there's Donald Trump, then everyone else.
Just like Trump.
Just like Trump.
Oh,
it's a little smaller.
I know.
So there's
not,
no, Nationally, nobody's poll numbers in this race are just like Donald Trump's, but across the early states, it appears clear Cruz and Rubio have become part of the top tier. Those three candidates seem to have the momentum before last night's debate, and it looks like they still have it heading into the holiday break. Lester?
Allie Jackson, thanks. In Southern California today, it was back to normal as hundreds of Los Angeles schools reopened after that hoax threat triggered a massive shutdown in the nation's second largest school district. Crisis counselors were on hand for kids who wanted to talk about what happened. The FBI is still trying to determine who was behind the threats. There are new revelations tonight of the investigation of the terrorist attack in San Bernardino. What the FBI is now saying about reports the female killer posted jihadist messages on social media that weren't caught during a background check to earn her visa to the U.S. Our justice correspondent Pete Williams on the trail of terror.
It's been an urgent question. Why did the U.S. government give Tashfeen Malik a fiancé visa to enter the U.S. last year if she had been posting pro-jihadist messages on social media before she got here? Simple, the FBI director disclosed today. She never did post any such messages back then. She sent only emails and direct private communications to her fiancé in the U.S., Syed Farouk.
So far in this investigation, we have found no evidence of posting on social media by either of them at that period of time and thereafter reflecting their commitment to jihad or to martyrdom.
Around the time of the shooting, investigators have said Malik did post a pledge of support for ISIS on a Facebook timeline. Comey also said the FBI has found no indication that the couple was in direct contact with any foreign terror organization before the shooting or that they were part of a cell. Still unanswered, he said, what else were they planning? Also today, the Secretary of Homeland Security said he'll begin issuing periodic bulletins to describe the changing nature of the terrorist threat nationwide without raising the overall threat level as the old system did or waiting for specific threats.
We want to put in one place for the public to see what we are seeing concerning the homeland and what we are doing about it and what the public can do about it.
The first such bulletin is on the DHS website today, describing the general threat of self-radicalized extremists who could strike with little or no notice. Future bulletins may advise people to expect longer screening lines at public events like the Super Bowl or at the airport when security is ramped up. And tonight, the White House says President Obama will meet with shooting victims and their family members in San Bernardino on Friday. He'll then head on to Hawaii with his family for the holidays. Lester?
All right, Pete, thanks. A new study just out today could change the way doctors treat an all-too-common health emergency. For decades, the go-to treatment for appendicitis has been surgery to remove the appendix. But now, as NBC's Rahama Ellis explains, doctors are exploring a new option for children that may eliminate the trip to the operating room.
Today, 12-year-old Aria Gibson still remembers the painful appendicitis that nearly ruined her family's trip to Disney World.
Well, it was kind of like somebody was stabbing me over and over again every time I would move.
She had never been sick like this before, so I was very afraid for her safety.
But instead of surgery, Aria was treated with antibiotics, becoming part of the first study in the United States on using them for early and mild cases of appendicitis in children.
She was able to go home a day or two later.
The small study found with antibiotics alone, 95% of the children improved within 24 hours and were discharged without undergoing surgery. A recent study in Europe showed similar success for adults, resulting in less recovery time and lower health costs. The classic symptoms of appendicitis include pain around the navel, moving to the right side, also nausea and fever. The new study found about 1 in 4 young patients' cases were mild enough to avoid surgery.
In order to meet that criteria, you have to have your pain for less than 2 days, and the inflammation has to basically be contained within the appendix. So there's no signs that the appendix is about to rupture or that it has ruptured.
And for most, the appendicitis didn't flare up again.
They didn't say you must have surgery or you must have antibiotics. We were able to choose, and that was really a wonderful thing for us.
A choice that worked for the Gibsons, who made it to Disney World. And Aria has been symptom-free for 2 years. Rahima Ellis, NBC News, New York.
Still ahead here tonight, exclusive access inside the top-secret Los Alamos nuclear lab, where the technology behind the most destructive weapons known to man is now being used instead to save lives from cancer. We're back now with an NBC News exclusive. Rare access into the Los Alamos nuclear facility. It will forever be known as one of the birthplaces of the atomic bomb. But now it's also being used to develop a very different kind of weapon, one that puts Los Alamos on the cutting edge in the battle against cancer. NBC's Janet Shamlian has more in our special series of reports, Target Cancer, Chasing the Cure.
Tucked away in the mountains of New Mexico, the Los Alamos National Laboratory. For decades, a top-secret nuclear weapons lab. Today, it's at the forefront of groundbreaking research that could change the fight against cancer. NBC News obtained exclusive access to the highly secure compound.
So this is the isotope production facility,
where physicist Eva Birnbaum showed us how they're manufacturing a radioactive treatment that targets tumors, but unlike standard radiation, doesn't kill the healthy tissue around them.
This glass window is actually several different panes of leaded glass, about 3 feet thick, to offer us protection from the radioactivity inside this hot cell.
These are the remote manipulator arms.
The material's so toxic, scientists use these robotic arms to work with them.
So that piece would have to be lifted up and placed on top of the other piece, just like that. Very good.
Here's how it works. A metallic disc is blasted with a high-energy proton beam, making a cloud of radioactive particles. The particles are partnered with a protein to make actinium-225. Think of it as a laser-guided missile injected into the body and traveling directly to cancer cells.
In terms of breakthroughs we've had in cancer treatment over the past couple of decades, how big is this?
I think this will be tremendous. If we can really get all these pieces to work together, this should be a very effective way to treat cancer in the future.
Dr. Joseph Jurczyk tested the therapy on leukemia patients in clinical trials. Some went into remission.
This is a more focused radiation. It's more precise, and it allows for efficient killing of the targeted cell alone.
Doctors hope this massive equipment at Los Alamos will boost production and eventually help patients with many cancers.
I think we'll see faster progress, and we'll see this going global.
Nuclear technology once used for destruction, now focused on saving lives. Janet Shamley and NBC News, Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Tomorrow in our series, the quick freeze therapy that's being used to prevent one of the fastest growing forms of cancer in America. When we come back, are medical choppers used too often? Serious safety questions tonight after yet another one went down in Phoenix. A big scare on the runway in Nashville. 8 people injured when a Southwest jet that had just landed from Houston last night skidded off the taxiway as it was approaching the gate. It ended up in a ditch. 133 passengers and 5 crew members evacuated the jet. The FAA is trying to figure out what went wrong. And federal crash investigators are looking into the cause of a medevac helicopter crash outside Phoenix overnight that claimed the lives of 2 crew members. It's the second deadly crash involving an air ambulance in just a week, raising concerns yet again about this growing industry. 1,500 medevac choppers transport some 400,000 patients each year. Here's Tom Costello.
The crash scene in Arizona, rugged and snow-covered.
Suddenly have possibly located the crash site.
The EMS chopper crash killed a pilot and flight nurse, the second medevac crash in 5 days. In California last week, 4 died. Nationwide, since 2004, there have been 46 fatal medevac crashes, killing 128 people.
And our industry's sole purpose is saving lives, not losing them, and no one is more invested in safety than the air crew members and the clinicians that climb into an air medical aircraft every day.
Last year, the FAA issued new orders, stricter flight rules for helicopter operators, improved communications, training, and onboard safety equipment. But the FAA didn't order the night vision goggles or autopilot systems the NTSB still wants. Nationwide, only 7% of medevac choppers are government-owned by counties, cities, or states. The vast majority are owned by hospitals or companies, many of them competing for business. And while they save thousands of lives each year, many emergency medicine professionals argue the vast majority of patients aren't critical enough to be airlifted.
We look at a lot of flights where, had the patient just simply been transported in the grand ambulance they were in instead of waiting on a helicopter, they would have gotten to the hospital quicker.
The medevac industry says many operators have voluntarily added terrain avoidance systems and night goggles, but this system designed to save lives is once again under scrutiny. Tom Costello, NBC News, Fairfax, Virginia.
We're back in a moment with a touching reunion between a man and his dog. They're not just best friends, but also partners from the battlefield. Finally, tonight, the search of a lifetime. When a Marine returned from Afghanistan, he discovered a new struggle here at home with PTSD. And so began his journey to reunite with his partner from the battlefield. Here's NBC's Gabe Gutierrez.
For Lance Corporal David Pond, the wait was longer than the war.
People have this perception that it's 30-year-old men that fight wars, and it's not. It's 19-year-old kids.
In Afghanistan, his mission was dangerous, searching for roadside bombs with his partner, a Belgian Malinois named Pablo.
Most people would run away from explosives.
Yeah.
You guys ran towards them.
Pretty much.
And so you had a bond.
We did. It was love at first sight.
He trusted Pablo with his life. One mistake, one missent could be catastrophic.
He was my rock. He was my foundation. All I knew was how to be deployed with this dog.
But when Pond returned home to Colorado in 2011, he found a different battle, PTSD.
Just when I finally processed everything, I broke. So.
How much did you miss Pablo?
Every day.
He needed his old friend more than ever. Pablo was now working at a Marine base in Georgia, so his former handler started a new mission to adopt him and to help make his case, collecting more than 187,000 signatures in an online petition.
You are truly man's best friend. Mission complete, Marine.
On this day, David Pond's long wait is over. His partner officially retired and reunited.
I don't have kids, but it's my son. It's the closest thing to a son I have.
Come here. Mission accomplished. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Albany, Georgia.
And that will do it for us on a Wednesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.